Good morning and welcome to Sportin' Life with Sam Kekovich and Leon Wigard. It's the day after the Melbourne Cup, and Sam, you look absolutely delighted.
I look.
You can feel some of the people, some of the time.
Well, looks can be deceptive. I must concur with you, Leon. Look, I am extremely happy. At my age, when you get up and you're erect, you've got to be happy.
Sorry, what was that?
The volatile. Sorry? What? When you get up and you're erect, you're upright.
Oh, yes. Yes, right.
Oh, no, no, I take a blue pill now, you know that, so I don't roll out of bed. But on a serious note, look, the volatile investment portfolio that we normally commonly allude to as a punt, I keep telling you, was a bit volatile yesterday. So from the spreadsheet, I won't look at it yet, but there's even indication that I'll be using a fair bit of Red Biro. And the other thing is I'll be seeking the benevolence and the philanthropy of good friends that I've surrounded. Don't go into detail and drop words in a moment, all right? Give people the impression that I'm erratic. So some of my investments that I might have to cash in.
I'll just head over to Dad. I've got my keys in there and sunglasses.
Now, I know you've got an appointment this afternoon in the city. Now, if you happen to be going down Flinders Street, I'm doing a bit of busking there at about 2:30.
Well, you were actually at the racetrack yesterday.
I was.
But you obviously either got lost or you had another gig, because you were at Warwick Farm in Sydney.
I was at the William Inglis Hotel there at Warwick Farm. I had a function there for a couple of iconic Australian companies. As some of you very well know, Lawrence and Hanson, and also Schneider.
Very, very big in electrical.
But I also caught up with another company that I'll be involved with called Domino's Pizza. That you'll be seeing a fair bit of me on.
Oh.
And when you see those 10 boxes arrive at your doorstep, make sure you've got an egg flip there for me when I deliver, all right?
We've got a pizza maker at home.
Yeah.
Electric one. Yeah,
no, these are the real deal. These are Domino's pizzas.
Yes.
They're very good. They're the new ones, though, because they'll be a lamb pizza.
Oh, has that been announced yet, or are you bringing
it? No, it
rules?
Is. Well, I'm shooting. Well, I'm currently shooting, so I think it's going to be public knowledge.
Shooting means an ad.
An ad, yeah. But, well, yeah, that's the way we talk in my language. And we shoot and then we're between assignments for a while. out of work, I mean.
Can I introduce our guest today?
Oh, we got one.
Well,
oh, I thought I was filling in.
We saw this guest at the in the foyer at Crown on the day of the Carbine Club Derby Eve lunch.
We did.
And I've known the guy for 100 years, since he first came from New Zealand, actually. He came into 3UZ, the racing station.
So do I.
And as it turned out, my connection with him was that he moved from Auckland down to a beautiful part of New Zealand, which I'd played water polo in.
By the name of?
Tiomitu.
Tiomatu.
Well, that'll do.
I think it is Tiomatu, I'm not sure.
I'll ask.
Waikikamukau.
Anyway, well, without talking about that background, we might as well introduce Gary Willetts in this grand final with Gary. Thanks for joining us today, and it was nice catching up with you at the Carbine Club.
Yeah, it was great seeing Leon, you and Sam there, and a lot of good memories. Sam drove me home before I actually shifted here. Johnny Stocker took me to the North Melbourne.
That's right.
Pub in North Melbourne, and Sam had a few drinks and decided to drive me home.
where were you living when you first arrived here, Gary?
Turak. He hasn't moved out of Turak since you arrived.
No, this was before I shifted. I was staying with Dr. Jim Clancy in St. Kilda, and Sam decided to drive me home.
Well, we used to run the gauntlet in those days, Gary.
You did.
I deleted those things off my CV. I've got a little smarter.
There's a treble. Oh, yeah. There's a treble. Gary Willetts, Sam Kekovich, and Johnny Stocker. The late Johnny Stocker.
Yeah, the late Johnny Stocker. Yeah.
We should just tell people who Johnny Stocker was. He was the Colin Hayes' number one jockey.
He was.
He moved great from jockey. South Australia across here.
Great ride.
Very competitive, and rode the greatest Caulfield Cup winner.
How now?
How now with Alan Johnson, part owner.
You did.
And I think drew about number 22
or
something.
He did, outside barrier.
Outside barrier, and he was a wonderful horseman. And
The saddle actually shifted on it too, Leon.
Like I didn't know that.
He was perched up on top of it, on the wither. And it was one of the best bits of horsemanship I've ever seen.
How can like you control? You can't control a horse when you're up there, can you?
No, you just have to sit there.
And sit there.
But he had wonderful balance, Johnny. Like, you know, you used to see jockeys like him, Peter Cook and those boys. They didn't really have to do much on a horse. Horse just ran for them.
Yeah.
So it's great.
He had one stirrup shorter than the other.
Oh, yeah, Johnny. I didn't know that.
That was one of the things that...
He's a font of knowledge. Well, that's superfluous information. We're going to be here till 3 o'clock. Well, let me tell you, there's no better jockey than the one G. Willits, let me tell you. Now, I'm going to start, with your permission, Leon, can I start?
Yeah.
A little bit. I'm going to go back to good old days because I remember, because like all of us, I think it's fair to say, you know, we all had an association with the fairer sex, and when we were in pursuit of that fairer sex, no matter what was in our way, it was no hindrance. We would overcome any barrier. laughing at, Gary?
Now, yeah, that's right.
So when you met your lovely girl, Raylene.
Yeah.
Rails lived at a place called Matamata, did she not?
Ray Wynn.
Well, I call her Rails.
108 miles
you actually did track work and plied your trade and made a good living. But despite that, you're still prepared every day to drive that 108 kilos. I don't know what you did overnight, but you left in the wee small hours.
Day. I used to go down on a weekend and then come back. I had to be back at Elsley to ride work for Merv Ritchie. And then it was a fair way. And I had a little Morris 1000 in those days. And I didn't have a heater in the car. I used to get up real early and start driving back. The window would start icing over, so I used to have to stop halfway home in the back road and go and ask the farmer for some warm water to throw over the window.
Goodness, great.
But why didn't you stay there and ride there or bring her back with you?
Well, what happened, I was very lucky. The trainer there, Bill Ford, rang me up one day and said, "Would I go and see him?" And I went round home to see him, and he said, "Look, why don't you shift here?" And I said, "There's too many jockeys here, Bill." And he said, "Listen, son, if you come here, you'll be eating duck and they'll be eating feathers." So I said, "All right, I'll give it a go." And I went with him. And look, he had his own track, and other times he'd worked them at the Matamata racetrack. But he was a stickler on horses leading on the right leg, like Auckland races the same way as Sydney, and the Waikato was the same as Melbourne. And he'd worked them Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then the other days they've worked on the other leg. And he taught me that much of getting horses leading on the right leg. And I'm sure Manicato wouldn't have won the Golden Slipper if it wasn't for Bill Ford, what he taught me. When I jumped out of the barrier, Ray Selkirk was leading on a horse, Black Opaque. Every time I'd try and get Manicato in behind him, he'd get on the wrong leg and start running off the track, and I'd get him back from what Bill had taught me. And as we straightened up, he got on the right leg, and I let him go, and he put about 4 lengths on the field. And then about 150 metres before the winning post, I lost him, and he got on the wrong leg, but I just rode him hands and heels, got past the post, and then the 2,000-metre shoot's about 100 metres past the winning post at Rose Hill. He did a left-hand turn at full gallop, went straight up there. I went over the side and hung on. Well, he was pretty tricky to ride when he was a two-year-old. He got a lot better when he got older.
So how many wins did you have on Manicato?
25.
Goodness gracious.
25.
Yeah.
We'll get to Manicato shortly, but just tell us about, so with Ray Wynn and all those early days and all the tutelage of Bill Ford and toing and froing, then finally what led to the ultimate decision to come across to across the ditch?
Well, it was, I was actually down at Trentham in Wellington. The Wellington Cup meeting was a really big meeting in those days. And I rode Battle Heights in the Trentham Stakes, a weight for age race, and he won it. And Tim Douglas said to me, "Look, I think I'll give him a crack at the Sydney Cup." You know, this was in January. And he said, "Will you come and ride him?" And I remember Bill Skelton was there. It was the first time I'd been leading the premiership. And I said to Bill, "Oh, Tim's asked me to go to Sydney." I said, "I don't know where to go." And I'll never forget it. Bill opened these big lockers, big mahogany lockers we used to have at Wellington. They were beautiful. He said, "See that, son? I've been leading jockey 9 times. He said, "It doesn't jump out and say, here's some money. If you can go over there and win on these horses and get going, you go for it." So I took his advice and came over, and then we had a bit of bad luck. The Sydney Cup used to be on the Monday in those days, and we were going to run him a fortnight before in the Chippy Norton at Warwick Farm, where we were yesterday. And he'd got down on his heels and we couldn't run him, so he actually missed a run. And then we ran him on the Saturday in the Autumn Stakes, a weight for age race. And he only got beat about a length. And for some reason, the press took a real, you know, go at him, and he went from favourite to blowing out to about 30 to 1 or something in the Sydney Cup. And I remember going to the races, Tim said to me, now listen, he's missed a fair bit of work, just look after him. So I can remember that race like it was yesterday. I jumped out, he was a beautiful horse to ride, and he was running about 8th or 9th, and as we go down past the 1600, I'd sort of moved up a little bit. As you come down the side at Ramwick, you've got quite a straight bit of run there at the 600, and I'd moved into about 4th spot, and I thought, geez, going good. And as you come up that round that turn, you've got that rise at Ramwick. Well, to Battle Lights, he was used to being working up hills at Morrisville. Like, it was like a running downhill to him. So I sat on him, and Peter Cook came at me really quick on Grand Print. He actually went past me about half a length. And as we levelled out, I was a half a length behind him. I thought, gee, I haven't even asked the old boy to go yet. I used to call him Freddie. I said, come on, Freddie, let's go. And I remember he got up and won by a neck. And, I had some great thrills riding great horses, but to win a race in Australia was just unbelievable.
Now, we're mid-70 now, aren't we?
74, yeah. 74.
Well, Battle Heights, you know, put you on the map in a way here in Australia.
Definitely. Like, we had that hard run in the Sydney Cup, and he was supposed to run the following Saturday in the Queen Elizabeth Stakes. And I was in the jockey's room, and it started bucking in there, Leon. It was like the end of the world. I've never seen a sky go so black. So they put the races off for a week, and that gave him another week to get over the hard run in the cup. And they finished up 5 runners, and on the way to the races, I said to Tim, I might have to lead on him today, Tim. He said, he's never led. I said, well, I might have to, because if I don't, I said, they'll go too slow and they'll out-sprint him. So I went to the front on him, set a nice pace, and he went away and won by 8 lengths. It wouldn't have really mattered how I'd ridden him. And then, of course, we brought him down to Melbourne, and the first one I rode in Melbourne was the Cox Plate at the Valley, so... Ooh. Had a good run there, and then we took him over to Perth. He won the Cox Stakes. That's a big weight for age race before the Perth Cup. And the Perth Cup, he had 62 kilos, and it was just too much weight. But he was a great horse. He, you know, at that luncheon where I met you two guys, I ran into Greg Carpenter, and Greg said to me at the time, he said, Gary, why don't you put some more on about Battle Heights? People don't realise how great he was.
Yeah, good bloke, Greg Carpenter. In fact, he was going to the Northern Territory, I think, last time I heard. We need to get him...
He's in Hong Kong.
We need to get him on this program.
He's handicapper in Hong Kong. Yeah, so he came down with a Rheumatic Warrior, and that's where I saw him. Sorry, at the Cox Plate Day. Yeah.
Now, the jockeys around at that time, we've already mentioned Johnny Stocker, because I suppose the best of them all at that time, where was Roy Higgins at that time? Was he at the top of the tree?
Yeah, Roy Higgins was at the top of his game. Harry White, Midgey Didham, Mickey Mallion, Brian Andrews, Bobby Skelton, he didn't come over till later, but there were some great jockeys around at that stage. And, Roy was very good to me, Leon. Him and Janine looked after Raymond and I. Terrific, you know, and same as Alan Trevino. Alan was great to us. He fighted us through his family, because I never realised how hard it is for a woman to leave a family. Like, I was going 100 miles an hour, and I said, when I get to Australia, I won't go away so much. On the first fortnight I was here, George Hannon asked me to go and ride Family of Man in Brisbane, so I went up and went on him up there.
You talk about, you're bringing up so many names from the past. Alan Trevino, I think he's up on the Murray now, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he might have shifted to Bendigo now. He's had a little bit of trouble with his throat with cancer.
Bad luck.
Yeah. Well, that's champion bloke, Alan. Alan and Gail, we used to go there every Sunday night and have pizzas.
You can get a domino off Sam very shortly.
He was the number one jockey for Jeff Murphy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And one day at Flemington, we're fighting out a finish, and Alan's nearly put me in a headlock to stop me getting past him. And I protested, and my girls were young then, and they said, "Oh, Mum, will we still be able to go to Mr. Trevino's on Sunday night for a pizza?"
Gary, I know Battle Heights put you on the map, but yeah. I guess the one horse that people mostly associate G. Willits with is Manicato.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, it's, you had 25 wins on Manicato, yeah. And the great thing is, we talk about the Great Australian Dream, where you can, you know, buy a horse for, you know, pittance and, you know, realise your dream. I think Manicato cost, what, 3,500 or something, did he?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, definitely.
Unbelievable when you consider the world. Yeah. And yet, in those days, well, it's all relative, I know. I think 40,000 was the prize money, was it not?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, like a lot of the races, Johnny Tapp rang me up about 4 or 5 months ago, and we did a podcast like we're doing, and he said, "Gaz, I'm going to start it off. When you won the Golden Slipper, it was worth 150,000 or something. Now it's 5 million. The Oaks, this one, the Cox Plate, 5 million. I said, "I don't want to hear any more, Johnny. I was born too soon."
Yeah, but Gary, you bought your house for $10. You're paying a million for it these days.
Yeah, definitely. That's right.
That's the big difference.
And tell me, it's what you do with the money too.
The Golden Slipper must have been a great thrill for you too.
Oh, look,
to go to Sydney.
Yeah, well, like, I was number one rider for Bonnie Hoister at that stage, and when I won the Blue Diamond on him, you know, they decided to have a meeting, Mallow and Bonnie, and Bonnie said, "I think I'll keep him here for the size." I said, "You're joking." I said, "We can go to Sydney and win the Golden Slipper." And so we discussed, and he said, "Look, I'll get Max McRae at Epsom to put the stores out, and we'll gallop him Sydney way, see how he goes." And we had a Sydney sprinter down here at the time. But when I jumped out of the barriers, I just never ever saw the Sydney sprinter. Manicato just left him for dead. And I remember when I came back, I had my whip, and I went, "Oh, those Golden Slippers."
You mentioned a name there, Gary, Bunny Hoisted.
Yeah.
It was a tragedy that one Saturday you got a phone call, did you not?
Oh, yeah, that was shocking. Well, actually, it was on the Sunday night, and I'd been round to Alan Trevina's, and we'd had a few reds. And, oh, that's right, early in the night, Bonnie rang me. He said, "Look, you better get home early. We want to work the horses early in the morning, Monday morning. So I get home, and I'm sitting sleeping, and then the phone goes, and it's Ross, and I'd been half asleep and had too much red. I said, "Yeah." Rose said, "Who was that?" I said, "Ross." I said, "I don't know if he said Bonnie died or he's just had a heart attack." The next thing, Margaret, his daughter, rang me, and, oh, I couldn't believe it, Sam, because Roy had beaten me by one win in the premiership that year, and Bonnie said to me on the Saturday, "Don't go." He wasn't going to Mini Valley. He was going to Cranbourne or somewhere. "Next year, son, I've got that many horses to come in. You'll be leading jockey by that far. It won't be funny." And it was just a tragedy, you know, that he was such a wonderful guy to ride for.
Gary, you had a career of so many highs, you know, Battle Heights, Manicato, William Reed's, Blue Diamonds, Slippers. But there was has been a dark side. There was one dark side, and I remember vividly, on Manicato, it was Manicato and Carriman. Remember Carriman? Yeah.
Oh, I certainly do.
He protested. You beat him convincing, but he protested. And the stewards, which you never had a great deal of time for, they never had a great deal of time, treated you with total disdain and dismissiveness. And you copped 3 months. But that three months ultimately cost you the ride on R1, which you could have been a Melbourne Cup winning jockey.
Yeah, well, that's right. But look, what happened... Look, I had to get out. Caramus trying to hold me in, and we had quite a bump and jaw. The Manicato was just going so easy. When I bumped Caramus, he went out about 4 or 5 horses, and Manicato raced away and won. And they protested, it was thrown out. And I thought at the time we'd both get a couple of weeks, you know, like, because Gary Murphy and I were bumping one another. And then on the later in the day, I ride R1 in the Herbert Power, and he won by about 3 lengths. And George said, "Well, he's running in the Caulfield Cup, Melbourne Cup." On the Wednesday, they charged me with foul riding and give me 3 months.
Was it foul riding or incompetent? Was it careless?
They changed the rules because Like, and when they gave me the 3 months, I went, I said, Mr. Hearn, I said, I'm engaged to ride Arlen on Saturday. And he just looked at me and said, Willits, you're out. You know, you had no sort of
recourse or comeback
or anything in those days. And so then I appealed to the VRC committee. And that's when they didn't uphold it. They just dismissed it. And I did the work with Channel 10, and I'll never forget it when I went, wanted to jump off the bloody stand. But, then I think Alan Trevena and Pat Hyland, I went to the Melbourne of VRC and said, look, you know, it's not right. I got charged with foul riding. So they met and they called me in. Rupert Steele was chairman of the VRC at the time.
What a great man, Perrin.
And he got me to go to his home, and I'm sitting with a cup of coffee, and he said, Gary, none of the committee feel you're guilty with foul riding. Well, I nearly dropped the bloody coffee. And I said, well, why didn't you uphold the appeal? He said, there's only three things, careless, incompetent, and foul. Well, he said, it wasn't careless because you knew what you're doing, and it was not incompetent because you knew what you're doing. So that was the only thing we could leave the charge at. So they then charged it, you know. So, and lucky they did, because, like, I went over, Johnny Letts and I went to the States, and we rode, had seven from the rest of the world against the USA. Then we went to Canada and did the same thing. And, like, with that foul, and I also went to Japan and rode up there. Well, foul riding, I most probably wouldn't have been able to go.
Yeah,
so lucky they changed it. I was pretty hurt at the time, and, you know, but as Johnny Taps says, you're one of the anointed few that ride a real champion. So I suppose he makes up for it. But it would have been nice to have that Melbourne Cup.
Yes. Now, Manicato was owned by the same guy all the way through, wasn't he?
Yeah, Mel Seckle.
Mel Seckle, of course, he's an old surfer from Angleton.
Yeah, that's right. He used to love fishing. Like, I'd say to Bob, where's Mel? Oh, he's in Alaska, or he's over in New Zealand. He's somewhere fishing.
Yeah.
Lizard Island, whenever first, you know, now it's a real popular place to go to.
Now, Sam just bowled over a number of big wins on Manicato. Did you ride all five William Reid Stakes wins?
Yeah, I did.
Amazing record, that.
Oh, it is. To win five weight for eight races in a row is incredible. And, like, it's hard enough to get a horse to run 5 years in a row, let alone win. And, like, he was very unlucky in a futurity. He won four futurities and just got beaten the other one. Galleon just beat him a neck. So he could have had five of those, three CFO stakes. And then, like, when he won the Rothmans 100,000, he carried 58 for a three-year-old, and he just had the incredible will to win. But, Sam, you were saying about the races being 40,000. That's why they tried to get him to run 2,000 metres, because those races were the first races to be 100,000. And, God, he nearly went over that Australian Cup. Dulcify grabbed me right on the line. But he was actually gone, you know, I reckon 150 metres out. There was just no horse underneath me. And Family of Man come at him, and he sort of fought Family of Man off. But Dulcify just went whack. He was 80-1 Dulcify that day.
You're not allowed to bet, though, are you, Gary? Did you bet?
No, I didn't bet on him. Brent Thompson might have, because Brent reckoned he was the best horse he rode.
Oh, Fury's Order wasn't bad.
He's pretty good.
Tell me.
Yeah, well, there's a story. Like, I got home one Friday. We all used to play golf at Keysborough on a Friday, and Raymond said, Brent Thompson's rang up. He wants you to pick him up next Friday. I said, no, I said, play golf. And she said to me, look, you go. You know, so I went and picked him up. And I said, where are you staying? He said, I'm staying with you. So he came and stayed with us. And then, of course, he went on Fury's Order on a Saturday. And then I went on Holiday Wagon in the Mooney Valley Cup.
In the Mooney Valley Cup, yeah, for Bart.
Yeah.
That's right. You had a good relationship with Bart too, didn't you? You had a relationship with Bart.
Yeah.
Even though Roy was his number one rider, but you also shared a number of good wins.
Yeah, I was lucky, like, you know, Tommy Smith, all those guys. Yeah. It was great.
Tell me, Gary, the Achilles heel of all jockeys is, of course, weight. Did you ever have weight problems, or you?
No, I was pretty lucky. I was a bit tall, but I was always pretty skinny, and I used to watch my weight all the time. But in my day, you used to, you know, have to ride work every day, and used to ride on races on a Saturday. And then the Wednesday meetings came along, you'd ride Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. So used to watch it a bit, but I was always pretty lucky. I could ride around, you know, walk around at 51 kilos.
Which leads me to the obvious question that beckons next is the weight scale for jockeys. Do you think it's fair, or do you think they should be elevated?
Well, I think they have put them up quite a bit. But I was looking at Mark Zari yesterday, and you know, Ray and I both remarked how gaunt he looked in the face. Like he must do it really tough, that boy. And you know, I used to see Roy, Paddy Hyland, and these boys, McMillan, most probably.
I think Roy, the biggest meal Roy ever had was a cigar and two coffees, black coffee.
Yeah, that's it.
That's all he ever ate. That's all he ever had. Oh, I had a bit of scotch. Yeah, I left that out. Yeah.
Gary, talking about weight, after your riding days, you had a bit of a weight problem. I think getting away from your businesses with all the profits in the pockets, because you got into the pub game, and that's been hugely successful for you.
What a shrewd business mind you've got too.
Yeah, no, look, it's been great, you know, and I really enjoyed it too, Leon and Sam. Like, you know, I love seeing people and talking to them, and I'd jump in the bar and do everything on a Friday because we couldn't get staff. I'd be running meals and different things, so it was good.
Now, you put in a number of hotels, or you owned a number of hotels. Which I think you still got. You own the freehold, not the leasehold. You've leased them out and you own the freehold.
Right. Yeah.
You've always been a firm believer in owning property, haven't you, Gary? You invested wisely.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you've got to, I think, Sam. Too many blokes waste it.
Well, we were talking about, I might have got the pronunciation wrong, but I mentioned Teo Amitu, and you had land down there at one time.
No, Matamata.
Matamata.
I used to go and ride work at Teo Amitu. I used to ride Chantel. Right. She was a good filly for Jack Hayes and Bill Sanders and a lot of good trainers there, Joe Whitcliffe. Alec Cook, when I was an apprentice, he used to put me on all the right weights and I used to go over there. It would be about 3/4 an hour. In those days, you'd go across the back ways from Matamata to Tiamutu, but now it'd be like everywhere, I suppose. The traffic would take you about 2 hours.
Yeah.
Gary, are you amazed at the evolution of racing today? You know, in your day, it was predominantly just, you know, tribal to a large degree. But now you see it international. A lot of the trainers now buy most of the horses in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's amazing, isn't it, the evolution of racing?
Yeah, and the shuttle stallions, how they'll do a season in England and Ireland and then whip them down here. It is. It's just all changed so much, Sam.
And what about your view on racing in Australia and jockeys?
I think we're very lucky. We've got great racing, got great jockeys. And, you know, like James McDonald, those two wins he had with Cox Plate just lifted over the line. And then again in the Derby, great seeing Damien ride those three winners so far at the Carnival. And I hope he goes out on a high on the last day. That'll be wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, he's been such a great rider for so long. And
a great ambassador too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it'd be great.
Our guest is Gary Willetts, and we're talking racing, of course. If I can take you back to New Zealand again, Fred Smith had a lot to do with your career decisions.
Yeah, he certainly did, yes. I ran into him when I was 13 at Elsey, which we like going to Flemington here, and that was in Auckland. And I said, can I come out on the school holidays? And he said, oh, yeah, if your mum and dad say. And I went home and said to my dad, I met Mr. Smith today. He said, I could go out. And he said, look, I'll see what your mother said. And I heard him say to my mother, look, we'll let him go or he'll get it out of his system and come home. I never went back home.
Did you ever consider being an All Black?
No, I'd have to play
halfback.
Scrum half, yeah, that'd be me. Funny thing, Sam, when we were kids, like at school, you all had to play rugby, and then league came in, and not at the schools, but they formed a team where I was living in Mount Eden. So I used to go and play rugby for the school and then go and play rugby league. And I used to be able to run like bugbear as a kid, and I used to play first 5'8", And I got selected to go along for these trials. And the coach looked at me and said, where do you play, son? I said, first 5'8". He just shook his head and said, you're going to get killed. I said, I'm pretty fast. That won't save, he said. The first game, two Marys went whack. That was it.
Yeah. That made up your mind very quickly.
Yeah, definitely.
What a good decision
that was. Gary, thanks very much for joining us today on Sport and Life. It's a pleasure to have you on board, and a great career. I know you enjoy your golf. You've still got your pubs, lovely wife, and all that sort of stuff. So life's been very good to you, and you've been very good with the people here too. So thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you again soon.
And Gary, just before you do, Leon, I know you love to have a brief libation, a little nip of red. Of course, we operate here from the Prince of Wales, which is Jerry Ryan, a great friend of ours and friend of yours too, I believe.
Yeah.
Who owns Mitchelton Wines and got a wonderful, wonderful product. And normally our guests are in receipt of a couple of bottles of fine red or white, as you say.
No, they're not. They're presented.
They're presented.
Offered.
Unfortunately, right. Leon's in charge of distribution. Now, I don't know if you're aware of Leon's social hiccups in recent times, but if you get them, consider yourself lucky.
Thank you very much.
That's a very bad rap I get on that. He reckons my garage is full. What was that?
I said, that's not good.
No. I'm thinking about suing him, Gary. Anyway.
Good luck there.
Too smart, the Kiwis.
Yeah, they are.
They play us at a break.
Gary Willis joining us on Sport and Life.